I'm Anthony Walsh, and this is the Roadman Podcast, the show where we empower you with tools to optimize your health, your happiness, and your longevity. You're going to love today's conversation. I know I did. It is with Mr. Kimo Seymour, the man responsible for the Lifetime Grand Prix Series, which is redefining cycling across the US, and it's having ripples all across Europe. Kimo has been on the podcast before, and the conversations always flow that much better with our repeat guests. We're going to dig in and talk about the mud-soaked challenges and controversy at Unbound, and I'll try and unpack the domination in both the male and female category from Keegan and Sophia in the 2023 series. Think of this as your behind-the-scenes look at what went right and what went wrong in 2023 and what you can expect from the Lifetime Series in 2024. Here's a little taste of what awaits you today.
You know, I think we would love to have someone like Sagami. You know, one of the issues we want to be really careful about, we don't want this to become like the senior PGA, right? We don't want it to be the senior league, right? We missed you at Leadville this last year, and I know you're planning on shooting again for it this year. You'll see it's like a family reunion, and it'll be like your first trip to the family reunion. You're going to meet your family you didn't know you ever had. You know, when there was a question about, you know, why are you interested, or why do you think you should get to race Unbound? And it was something like, well, I retired from the road world tour and I won the Olympics, and I think it would be really fun to try gravel or something like that. All right, we'll take that guy.
Kimo, welcome back to the Roadman Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be back.
I love having guests second, third time around. It's like the first time is a filter and you go, okay, this dude's not totally bizarre. He's not going to wear like my podcast guest I was sharing with you this morning that definitely won't get aired. So I'm happy telling you about it, that wanted to wear a COVID mask all the way through the interview. I was pretty confident you weren't going to show up with a mask on.
Yeah, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I don't think I own a mask anymore.
Does anyone?
Apparently someone does. Some guy this morning.
You know, I had a bit of time between the two interviews today, and I was thinking back on 2023 since we talked. I'd say it's roughly a year ago since we talked last, and I set myself this laminated page of goals I wanted for the podcast because I didn't want to be dabbling in this. You know, every time I go over to my parents' house for dinner, they're like, oh, you going back to law? And I'm like, no, I'm not going back to law, but I wanted to do podcasting properly, if there's such a thing, and be professional at it. So I set myself some goals for 2023, and I looked back on it and I was like, you know what? I hit all those goals. My problem was I actually didn't set big enough goals. I didn't have a big enough vision. What's the vision for the Lifetime Grand Prix?
You know, for 2024, the vision for the Lifetime Grand Prix is to take it to even another level from what we did last year. So I think, you know, we've got an outstanding, you know, field of bike racers, and the field is getting just more and more stacked, and the selection process is getting harder and harder. But now that we've established the field and the 60 riders that we're going to have out there this year, the goal is, how do we amplify the stories that are coming out of the Grand Prix? How do we get more people around the world, quite frankly, engaged in what we're doing here with cycling in North America? And I think a year ago when you and I talked, I talked a little bit about, you know, we need more fans of cycling here in North America. And, you know, I've come to the realization that, you know, that while that is still important and we want to create more fans, we want to bring more fandom to the sport, there are hundreds of millions of fans of cycling around the world. And so this year, I think our strategy is, how do we take what we're doing here in North America to the rest of the world and grow the audience here domestically? But we need to show the world what we're up to. So we've got some pretty exciting things happening. We're having some discussions about broadcast opportunities, licensing rights there. We're about to announce our first of what I think will be many qualifying events for Unbound. One of the events in the Grand Prix will be one of our first qualifying events in Europe. Will be announced here shortly, and so we're seeing that it really is putting, I think the Grand Prix is putting what's happening in North American cycling kind of on the map, if you will.
Yeah, 100% it is. You touched on selection. What's the selection criteria? Like, how many athletes are you taking into the Grand Prix? And how does somebody, is it like a X Factor style? You go on, you see if you do a little bit of a song and a dance and you go, I like what you've got. You're part of the Grand Prix for next year.
You know, I wish it was that easy. it's actually challenging, and we probably get the most criticism for how that's done, and because it probably feels like there's a lack of transparency. To answer your question, we took 30 female writers, 30 male writers. We backed it down a little bit this year. Just we felt that, you know, at 35 and 35 last year, we probably didn't need to go up to that many. We figured we think 30 is probably the optimal number. We might even be able to reduce that in future years. But for now, 30 on each side. And the process was purely results focused this year. In the past, we've been accused of, oh, you're looking at people that have, you know, have big social followings, or you're trying to, you know, you're looking at other factors, you're playing favorites, this and that. This year, we took the top 15 from the men and the top 15 from the women. If they reapplied, they got in. And it turns out they all did. I think 15 on both sides came in. So half of the slots were already gone. And then the other half, we really looked at people's palmaries, and we really try, and even that can be very subjective, or seem subjective as much as we tried to be objective looking at people's results. We tried to keep a fair amount of people, you know, giving opportunities to some people from the international community that wanted to come in. We had a lot of international applications this year, a lot more than last year. But we also tried to, you know, we tried to find a balance between more veteran writers and more newbie up and coming writers. And so striking a balance between all of those factors, international, domestic, newer writers, more veteran writers, and then just focusing on results. And we kind of came up with a little matrix and how we did that. And I think we ended up with a really, really competitive field. So we'll see. We'll see. The variety of the events, the events are so unique and different that it's ironic that we have, you know, a couple people last year in Sophia and Keegan that ran away with it because they are so good in pretty much any conditions, just phenomenal bike racers, right? Mountain bike, short, long. I mean, you know, both winning, you know, winning Sea Otter, winning Leadville, you know, opposite ends of the spectrum in the mountain bike world, and then coming out and dominating in an event like an Unbound, a 200 mile gravel race. So, but it, because the races are so unique, it really takes a diverse field, you know, and it'll expose some people's weaknesses.
I'm trying to think, Kimo, as a fan, like the YouTube series is brilliant. Like if anyone hasn't watched it, I watched it. I think I texted you or emailed you like the day after I binged it. Like I was down to do a 60-minute recovery ride on the Watt bike. I ended up like watching the entire series just sitting on the Watt bike. It's like top class. But I'm thinking about this from a storytelling perspective. There's only so much attention you can give to each character in a story like this, because like you're saying, you have 35 athletes that are male, 35 female last year. You can't shine a spotlight on all those in a YouTube video, because as a viewer, I kind of have my favorites and my favorites. I'm not sure if you've read the book Save the Cat, and it's this idea of storytelling. And in a Hollywood movie, they normally have a scene called Save the Cat. And Save the Cat is like Mark Wahlberg in the opening scene goes and takes a cat out of a tree, hands it back to an old lady. Now we feel some connection or empathy to this character. So later on when he holds up the bank, we kind of go, maybe he had his own reasons for it. He's a pretty good guy. And that kind of has to happen in the YouTube videos. You have to see this backstory. And for me, I was kind of connected with Sarah Storm's story from the year before. And I was a little frustrated that I just didn't get to see more of her almost. So it's nearly, can you find different ways to tell this story? Because it's like the YouTube, as good as they are, there's a limitation with only being able to build 2, 3, 4 main characters.
It is. It's interesting. If you think about it, you know, we don't know, you know, we're getting ready for Sea Otter coming up here in April, the first event. We don't know what the story is going to be this year, right? You really don't know the story until you're looking in the rearview mirror. And so we spend a lot of money, a lot of resources, you know, capturing a whole lot more stories about different athletes. And then we kind of have to build those stories, like I said, in the rearview mirror. So once we kind of know how the stories kind of transpire and how they evolve throughout the season, then we start to build on, then we start to look back and go, okay, here's a storyline we think we can build on. And so, and then we also want to spread the love a little bit too. You know, we want to, you know, we don't want to focus on just the same 3 athletes year in and year out. So while we're building some, building some characters, everybody uses this, Drive to Survive as an example of, kind of a guiding light, if you will. And we're not super creative or anything. We're trying to mimic that in some ways where, people seem to connect more. What we're finding, people connect more with the stories and the human side of the racing than they do with the action that actually takes place on the course. And so you'll see the way we've kind of designed it. We want to tell some of those fun human, those human interest stories and make these athletes more relatable to people. They get up and they make pancakes just like you or I do before we go out on a long ride. And people like seeing that. But then you also get to see the action and see how they have to, how they have to step up and perform.
Yeah, I feel super invested in some of these athletes having watched them in this series. Keegan is a challenge, though, from a storytelling point of view, because no one likes the movie where no one has any vulnerability. Imagine watching Superman, and he was just this dude who could kill anyone, had unlimited strength, and can fly. That's a pretty shit story. But then you introduce kryptonite into the story, and it's like, uh-oh, something can kill him. Keegan doesn't really seem to have a kryptonite. It's like, here's this good guy, and he just wins everything. That's a pretty shit story arc.
It really is. I mean, the best kryptonite we could come up with was a couple sprints at the end of the year that he didn't win the sprint. Schwamigan, I think, and maybe Big Sugar. I think he was third or fourth. Finally they cracked him. But he still was second, third. I mean, like a worst race of the year. And so yeah, if he has a kryptonite, that was it, and that was about the best we could come up with. But the guy he is almost flawless. I mean, he and his training, his work ethic, his focus, his drive. I mean, it comes through. And to be honest, Sophia the same. It's just amazing what they can accomplish.
Power couple.
Yep. You got to admit though, does it bring people back again this next year to go, okay, is someone going to figure out the code? Someone going to figure out how to crack the code? It remains to be seen.
Well, like, I love your idea of bringing people into the series on merit. On one side of the scale, I love it, because the Keegan Sophia, there's a bit of intrigue there. Well, can you introduce someone new to the series, or can one of the existing characters, like a Pete Stettner, refine that World Tour legs and topple Keegan at the top of it? But then to push back against it, I almost don't care about the race for fifth and sixth. Like, I don't care about I don't care about the ability of those riders. I care more about the stories when it's not for the win. When it's for the win, I want to see someone pushing Keegan. So I get, yes, introduce these new guys who are going to push him hard. But after that, I don't really want a load of clones with no personality. I want to see a bunch of personality through the rest of it, because that's what storytelling is.
Well, it's funny you say that, because that's, we have those conversations when we're going through the selection process, and we talk about exactly that. Wouldn't it be great to be able to select based on, based on personality, and who's going to create a personality for the Call of a Lifetime series, even though we think they may not be a contender for the overall, because you're absolutely right. And that's part of the argument, when I said, we went up to 35 and then brought it back down to 30. And we're thinking next year it could, we could make it as little as 20 or 25, because the reality is those bottom 20, right? The people that are out of the top 10, if there isn't a great story to tell, or there's not a great personality there, you're right. People just aren't going to be interested, and they're not going to end up making the cut. So in the end, I mean, we obviously want to create a pathway for people to be able to come up through the series. And so, our hope is that some of the people that were in the, that they didn't make the top 10, maybe they made the top 20. Let's see if they can't be, the stories may start to be those people that are now moving up into the top 10 or top 5.
How deep are your pockets? One word to solve this. Sagan. Personality, talents, just retired.
I think we would love to have someone like Sagan. I mean, one of the issues we want to be really careful about, we don't want this to become like the senior PGA, right? We don't want it to be the senior league, right? And I'm hearing more and more about athletes that are saying, there's a pathway even to use this as a pathway to the World Tour. I would rather have that than us to just be a retirement league. But, with Sagan, someone like that who is clearly still competitive, I think this year, everything we're hearing, he's completely focused on the Olympics, right? And he's got to earn a spot still on the Olympics, even for his country. I think they don't, I don't even think they have a spot in the Olympics right now. So he's got to go earn that right now. I don't think we're going to be able to get him out here. But how about, you know, how exciting, I don't know if you read Greg Van Avermaet, he put in the lottery and literally someone on our team sent me a screenshot and said, I think this guy might be important. And we looked at his, he put a, you know, there was a question about, you know, why are you interested or why do you think you should get to Race Unbound? And it was something like, well, I retired from the road world tour and I won the Olympics and I think it would be really fun to try gravel or something like that. All right, I'll take that guy.
So is he going to, did he ride it last year or he's planning on riding it this year?
Oh, he's riding, he's coming this year. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Okay. He just put in the lottery. Yeah. Didn't call anybody, didn't try to pull any favors, no sponsors, nothing. Just, I'll just apply, see if I get in. Nobody knew. Yeah.
Roadman, 60 grams of carbohydrates per hour. That's the minimum recommended intake for your rides. Most people don't know that. Focusing on nutrition and fueling, it can make or break your performance, but it can be really difficult to find a high carb source that tastes great and isn't really tough on your digestive system. I've been cut out, if you know what I mean, a few times with GI stomach issues, and that's because of highly processed bars and gels. That's why I love VeloForte. These products never give me any gastro problems. That's because they're packed with real fruit, natural electrolytes, and they taste absolutely great. I love the chews, the Mela Apple Flavor Chew. It won the Great Taste Award. These chews are 100% natural. They're made with the purest electrolytes. They're a game changer. For me, it's something with the texture. It's a different texture from a gel, and it's so welcome at the later stages of a ride. I've got an amazing offer for you to go and check out for yourself because I want you to test this product out. If you head over to veloforte.com and you use the code ROADMAN30 at checkout, you're going to get 30% off your order. That's ROADMAN30, and you're even welcome to share this code with your club or friends or teammates so they can check these out too. A few years ago, I saw a huge gap in the market for an app that was like a cycling coach, but in your pocket. I knew that AI was ultimately going to be the best coach in the world. And I spent about 2 years of my life trying to make this app happen. Unfortunately for me, it didn't happen. But ever since then, I've kept a really close eye on this space to see if anyone else could succeed where I failed. The Breakaway app caught my attention a couple of months ago because Christian Van de Velde, yep, the Christian Van de Velde who came fourth in the Tour de France, is one of the co-founders. And it seems that the Breakaway have created the ultimate cycling training companion and they're bringing low-cost coaching to the masses. You'll know from listening to the podcast that my pet peeve is when cyclists head out the door with no plan, no goal, and just roll around without an objective. Don't be that guy! The Breakaway app looks at all your historic training data and it builds a plan around your strengths and weaknesses, so you're always going to have the perfect session. They also have integrations which I'm really excited about, Whoop and Oura Ring. The reason I've previously ditched my wearables is because the data just wasn't informing my training. No longer the case. Head on over to roadmantrial.com and you can download their app for free. That's roadmantrial, roadmantrial.com, and download the app for free. The link to this is in today's show notes. Talking about Unbound, 2023 Unbound was a mud fest. And depending on what media outlets or what athlete you listen to, some of them absolutely loved it and some of them were cursing you guys. How did you see that Mudfest debate?
Oh, it was just outstanding.
Yeah. It's like Paris-Roubaix, isn't it? As a spectator, when it pisses rain, you're like, amazing. You chat to any of the lads racing, they're like, oh my God, worst day of my life.
Oh, couldn't have asked for a better day. Like if you look at, I mean, and I told our team, you know, the team, we got beat up over it. And I kept telling the team, I said, listen, you watch. We will have more people in the lottery than we ever have before. We just finished up the lottery and announced all that. We don't disclose the numbers. Let's just say exponentially more people apply for the lottery for Unbound this year. So,
unbelievable.
You know, I made a few enemies of people that are mad because they spent a few thousand dollars to fix their bikes after destroying them in the mud and whatnot. But I mean, you can tell by watching the Call of a Lifetime series, we leaned in hard on that. We said, I mean, we've had quotes and all that. We took, you know, everything that we took on the chin we put it all out there in the, in those two episodes about the, you know, about Unbound, and just loved every minute of it. So I thought it was great. That's bike racing.
So what's the learnings from 2023 that you don't want to take into 2024?
I would say the only mistake that was made in the whole thing was someone on our team made mention on Friday that if it rains, we might change the course. And, you know, we probably should have never said that, but you know what? People make mistakes, and that, you know, there's, I even had a, I think there was a quote I saw in the Call of a Lifetime episode, one of the two Unbound episodes, where I said, we're never going to change a course just to make it easier. We'll change it to, you know, if there's a safety concern, or if there's, you know, if it's, you know, if there's a good reason, but not just to make it easier.
And looking broader at the 2023 season, was there bits of it that you thought worked really well? Because I know you brought in a lot of new rules, like you separated the men's and the women's, which I think was a great move. But how did that sort of stuff pan out in reality?
You know, I think all the changes we made last year, they worked really well. In hindsight, I wish we would have done it for every event. We didn't separate the men and the women at the RAD, a new event that we added because it's a smaller event. And unfortunately, you know, it was unfortunate because they all went out together. You know, we had some age groupers jump to the front as fast as they could. They got up there mixed in with some of the lead, you know, right up there with the lead men and women. You know, right when we hit the gravel, I was actually on a lead moto, and I looked back, and, you know, the courses aren't closed. I look over to my left side, a car pulls out. And then sure enough, some age grouper cuts in to miss the car and takes out Ruth Edwards. And she goes down, you know, like, I mean, this is 4 miles into the race, you know, and she's contending at the end of the season. And so if I had a do-over for this whole last year, that changing up the start at the RAD would have been, you know, giving the women their own start at the RAD would have been the right thing to do. So we decided we are doing that for all the races this next year. They will have their own starts. We're giving them even bigger separation to the age groupers that'll start behind them. And we're even working on, you know, for this next year, or this year, we're actually working on evolving to a no drafting rule or program for the elite women to be able to, taking away the opportunity to draft off of men during the race. And so,
because it totally changes, doesn't it? Like physiologically, it's a different skill set to be able to hold on to a strong man versus to lead yourself. Like I even think about, I'm a roadie when I try my hand occasionally at mountain biking. And I can go out with my friends who are mountain bikers, even pro mountain bikers, and I can kind of hold my own as long as I'm following them. But when I have to lead on a single trail, the mitt falls apart. I'm totally exposed. It's a different skill set.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think it's, you know, you hear all people talk about the spirit of gravel and everybody starts together. And that's just part of the way the racing happens. But I think we have to face the reality that it's evolving, and the professionalism of the front end of the race and these gravel and mountain bike races, it's risen to another level. And I think, you know, we have the opportunity, you know, we have the option to just kind of disregard it and say, we're sticking with the old ways and we're not going to evolve and change. Or we're listening to what it's frankly what the female riders want. It's what they're asking for. They want their own race. And until we can get to a point where we can separate them and have them race on their own day, separate day, same course, or however it is, you know, like they do in Europe, which I think we will get there. I will tell you, I think in the very near future, we'll get to a point where we will be able to separate the elites, and we'll have a
phenomenal.
Yeah, we will get to a point where we'll have the, you know, the age group or the kind of community rides, if you races on Saturday and the elites on Sunday, or vice versa. We're not quite there yet. You know, we're a mass participation model, right? We don't have the kind of media sponsorship, the media rights, the licensing right kind of revenue and whatnot that supports cycling, you know, professional racing in Europe. We're not there yet. I think we will get there. So for now, we're going to do our best to separate them within a race. So give them a race within a race and do our best to kind of create a bubble around them, if you will. We're going to learn. We'll make some mistakes. It's not going to be easy, but we've had a bunch of the women actually helping and advising us on what they think is fair or some things that we can try and test to roll this out here this year. And it's obviously less important for an event like, you know, Sea Otter, where it's 90% single track. We're not concerned, and it's a whole lot harder to monitor and enforce. But an event like Unbound, it's going to change the dynamic on the day. You know, some of these women will be out there, you know, they'll have their chance to kind of race within themselves. And I think it'll be really fun to watch.
one of the real appeals for me as a viewer watching this at the moment is it's the constant evolution. It's changing every year. I watched Unbound, I can't remember whatever year Ian Boswell won it, and it was coverage, or at least where I watched it, was on flow bikes, if I remember. Coverage was tragic. Absolutely chronic. It was dropping out like in the closing kilometers. There was long periods where the camera was just like shooting like empty fields. It was absolutely crap. To watch the evolution from that to you being full James Bond in a helicopter commentating this year, like that's only 3 years and you've turned into James Bond. Like that's wild. There's nothing else in cycling or sport that's evolving this fast.
Well, we're trying to up our game. That's for sure. And, you know, we're fortunate enough, you know, one of the other criticisms we get, we're big corporate. We have this big company behind us, but the benefit of that is we've got this big company behind us in Lifetime. And they have, our CEO has kind of given me full autonomy to go out and do what I think is right, what our team thinks is right to build this business and to build the sport in the U.S. We're just, you know, in the end, like I said earlier, we're a mass participation business. And, you know, our real business is the 30,000 other riders that do our events, not the 60 riders doing the Grand Prix. That's where our focus is. You know, I get on here with you and we talk a lot about the front, you know, the pointy end of the spear, but our, you know, the heart and soul of what we do is help people live healthier, happier lives. And this is how we do it. And I'm fortunate enough to have, you know, this big entity of Lifetime supporting what we're trying to do to evolve the sport in North America. And so, yeah, we're really blessed. And you know, you can be critical, and there are a lot of people are that say, oh, you're over corporatizing it and this and that. But you know what? In the end, I kind of have to have thick skin, you know, against the, you know, some of that criticism. I heard on another pod or someone a quote the other day that said, criticism is the background noise of success, something like that. And you know what? I think we're succeeding.
Look, Roosevelt has that famous quote. I'll butcher it now if I try and recite it, but it's the glory is to the one who's in the center of the arena, who's cut, who's scarred, who's marred, not the critic who's in the stands, you know, not taking a stance, not taking a swing. And I think that's definitely you. But you talked about the increasing professionalization of it. And with that, there's more and more money, not just in terms of prize money that you guys are putting up, which is pretty amazing, but it's drawn in endemic and non-endemic brands to sponsor these top athletes. Like, I don't know how much Keegan is making, but I heard his coach on a podcast recently saying if Keegan was going to the World Tour, he would take probably 60 to 70% pay cut if he went to one of the top teams. So he's making a substantial living from this. With that, there comes, as there has in regular cycling, the temptation to cheat. What's the anti-doping situation at the moment? Are you guys actively testing? Have you caught anyone, or is it something you're concerned about?
So we are actively testing. Actually, we felt in year one, we started working with USADA. We felt it was important for bringing this much money to the sport. We have to at least make an effort. This is a big challenge and probably one of my biggest, I'm going to say fears, but concerns with the growth of the sport is that, you know, a true anti-doping program would be out of competition and, of course, in competition testing. And we just simply can't afford to do it, even as big as we are. It would be, we could spend millions sending, you know, USADA all over the world to track down athletes and out of competition testing throughout the year. I mean, it's limitless what you could spend to try and do it. So we've chosen to test at select events and randomly test select athletes. And so this year we're actually going to increase that slightly. We feel like we just kind of each year we bump it up a little bit in the amount of testing. You know, the likelihood of catching anybody in competition is fairly minimal. I think you'd have to be.
I think it's not even a dope test in competition. It's an IQ test.
It is.
If you catch someone, they've done something really dumb.
They're really dumb if they get caught doing something, you know? So, yeah, so we're, you know, fortunately we haven't had any issues. Nobody's ended up testing positive and it's been, you know, at least clean at the races. I think at some point this is something that we probably, you know, it's one of the arguments for potentially having to probably work with, you know, or needing to work with USA Cycling and or USADA to come up with a program, because I think it's got to be more robust than what we're doing now.
I wonder, is there scope for you to change the equation on it? And by that, I mean, why I think that people dope or make any sort of borderline illegal action in life. You look at what the potential upside is. So you've got quite a lot of monetary reward, like we touched on with Keegan. Now you look at the likely chance of you getting caught, which is quite low. And then you look at the penalty if you do get caught. Now under UCI rules at the moment, or USADA rules, if somebody wants to consider doping, the upside, it's huge. It's contracts with World Tour teams. The chances of getting caught, statistically, they're not that high. And if you do get caught, you go on a four-year holiday and then you train away and then you come back into the World Tour team, probably on a higher pay grade, like we've seen with Valverde. That equation is broke. That equation is not, it's not causing an athlete to pause and think, is this a decision I should take? I often wonder if you change that equation with a lifetime penalty. If somebody gets caught doping, one infraction, boom, you're gone. You're never in a lifetime event again. Does doping then become so inconceivable that the idea of even doping is just like, why would I write off my entire career for this? I'm progressing anyway as an athlete.
You know, that's a great suggestion. We would just our plan has been, our policy has been, we would just adhere to the, you know, whatever the USADA guidelines, but that's a great suggestion. That should be, in my opinion, that should be a death sentence for racing, at least in our events. Doesn't mean that they can't, you know, most events in North America, you know, a lot of mountain bike, but most gravel events are not sanctioned. And so even you know, suspended riders can ride. There's no, without, you know, without them being sanctioned. So they can ride under a suspension, but we certainly could prohibit them from riding in our events if they were suspended.
It's the beauty of, you know, you talked about maybe the drawbacks of getting a little bit of criticism of the corporation in the background, but you do have that autonomy to make these rules where you look at US or UCI and go, look, they're doing some stuff right, they're doing some stuff wrong, and you can take those learnings and iterate on it like any business does.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the first time in years, I have really big targets that I'm super passionate about this summer. And although the warmer months are approaching, I don't want to slip into that trap I see so many riders falling into, just riding around with no focus and no aim with their friends simply because the good weather is starting to arrive. I'm still using my Watt bike almost daily to keep me sharp and on point with specific sessions all the way into my target events, Rift, Migration Gravel, and Leadville later this summer. That's why I'm really happy to be partnering with Wattbike. The Wattbike, Adam, it's sitting next to the desk in the recording studio, and if I have an hour between interviews, I jump on. It's removing all those friction points for me. No more 10-minute setup, unfolding legs, banging my knees off stuff, connection issues. It just works every single time. The Adam is perfect for riding Zwift because it has those crisp gear changes. Boom, boom. 1% power accuracy and max gradient capability of 25%. If only my legs had a max gradient capability of 25%. Even if I'm riding those steepest climbs on Watopia, it's absolutely fine. I'm actually riding that custom gearing setup. So if I'm riding a particularly hilly route, I'll select a more climbing suitable gear ratio. It's the business. If you're looking for an indoor trainer, if you're looking to stay sharp this summer and not lose that hard-earned fitness over the winter, I couldn't recommend the Wattbike setup any higher. It's the last indoor trainer you're ever going to need. Head on over to whatbike.com now and check out their full range. What's the challenge like of trying to balance courses that are challenging for the top athletes, that are sufficiently athletically stimulating enough for them season on season, and balancing that against the, I suppose, irreconcilable fact that amateur athletes don't have as many hours to train and are going to find something like an Unbound very, very difficult? Is there a to and fro that happens in the background on course selection?
So actually, you know, most of our events, if you look at them, you know, like an Unbound as an example, we just offer multiple distances. So, you know, you can start as short as a 25 or 50 mile distance up to 100 or 200. And then some people are crazy enough to go up to the XL, a 350 mile, you know? So a lot of our events, we just offer multiple distances, and that kind of provides the entree for the mass participant, you know, to show up, for the age groupers to show up and dip their toe in the water. And honestly, I think that's how most people get into it. So it's kind of nice that we have that option. The only events that don't are Crusher and Unbound. But I think every other one that we, I think every other one has a shorter distance option. So in the case of Unbound, you've even got a longer distance option.
Yeah. And increasingly you're starting to see people taking these, what was ultra a few years ago has now become standard. And what's ultra now is getting longer and longer. We're seeing these multi-day events kind of popping up like Badlands in Spain. I'm not sure if you've been following that event. Any thoughts on adding something that's a multi-day?
No thought from us. I think, you know, I think there's a market and there's a niche for that. You know, I will tell you one of the downsides to being the size of company that we are is we're not great at producing small events. We're just like, we have to kind of recognize where our weaknesses are. And we just, to be honest, we spend too much money and our overhead and our cost structure is such that it's tough for us to produce an event for 100 or a couple hundred people. You know, we just don't do it well. And so we, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 people, you know, I'm thinking the smallest. And we do one stage race up in Leadville, which is kind of a novelty and a cool event, sells out every year. We have 350 people in that event. That's a 3-day, basically over the Leadville course, but that's kind of one of our hometowns. But haven't really thought about expanding into the multi-day bikepacking type stuff. I think that's a niche for that someone that knows what they're doing should probably capitalize on.
Yeah, because I spend a lot of time thinking about what's the motivation for your age group, or like your ethos as a company is very similar to ours for the podcast. We have that tagline, health, happiness, and longevity. And I think about this a lot. What's your kind of my typical podcast listener or your typical participant? What are they looking for? And one of the things I've definitely zoned in on is they're looking to go back to work on a Monday morning and have a story to feel sufficiently epic enough to elicit a reaction from their coworkers of, you did what at the weekend? You went where? How many miles? And that bar is changing. It's becoming more and more normalized to ride 100 miles. So you need to keep etching it up almost. Are you finding that?
You know, I don't know that we are. I'm seeing that in the market for sure. Definitely seeing that in the market. You know, for us, I think most of our athletes, most of them aren't showing up alone at one of our events. It's truly a social event for them, right? Most of them are coming out with a group of friends. To people they train with, friends from around the country, and they get together for one or two events a year. And so it's a lot more experiential, I think, with our events. Certainly, you know, 100 and 200 mile distances that is still considered epic. You go out and do Unbound 200, you're going to show up on Monday morning and your workers are going to say, what the heck, you know, how the hell did you do that? You know, and you blow people's minds. But, for us, I think people walk away more just amazed by the experience and the community that has kind of developed around these events. It's almost like I know we missed you at Leadville this last year, and I know you're planning on shooting again for it this year. You'll see it's like a family reunion, and you'll it'll be like your first trip to the family reunion. You're going to meet your family you didn't know you ever had, you know, and that's, and yeah, you're going to come back and people are going to say, wait, you rode what at 10,000 feet? But yeah, to us, it's more about the experience than it is necessarily like chasing, like becoming more and, you know, make a more and more epic, like distance wise, if that makes sense.
Everyone's talking about AI at the moment. You know, it seems like we go through these market cycles. 24 months ago, everyone was talking about blockchain. Now everyone's talking about AI. I was racking my brain to see if there's an application into cycling events like this for AI. And the best I could come up with was, like you identified, most people go to these races as a group of 5 or 6 friends. Wouldn't it be cool if there was like an AI betting system where we could all upload our Strava data into it and the AI could accurately predict the finishing time and then we could like almost bet on an over-under on ourselves?
That could be pretty interesting, actually. It's funny you would bring that up. I was on a call earlier this morning and our team has been exploring a gamification of the races and actually being able to bet on the races. And so there is some discussion about that. I personally think AI, I think the first place AI is going to impact what we're doing is probably in the preparation phase. I think it's going to transform the coaching business. You know, I have a good friend that runs a coaching business that does a lot of the coaching for athletes for our series. And I've said, listen, I think you could be, I told him a couple of weeks ago, I said, I think you could go from 25 coaches to 5 coaches, you know, in a year, if you're not careful, if you're not watching and in tune with what's happening with AI, because that to me, I think is, That's a business that the model is vulnerable to the capabilities of AI, as an example. There, I see that being a huge opportunity for the people in the coaching industry.
Well, I'm secretly waiting for your big announcement next year that Keegan and Sophia have actually been robots, and you've been testing robots for the last 12 months.
There, I'd like it.
Kimo, really enjoyed catching up as always. Best of luck with the 2024 series. If anyone hasn't checked out the series from last year on YouTube, it's phenomenal. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Look up, if you haven't seen it, look up Call of a Lifetime Season 2 on the Lifetime Grand Prix YouTube channel, and hopefully see you out at one of our events. And Anthony, we're going to see you in August, right?
Hopefully.
Good. Thanks again.